Hey everybody, Jam Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership. I've got a great guest on the show today, a good friend of mine, and I reminded him today that we've known each other 10 years. It's Zach Badorf. And hey Zach, how are you?
Hello, thanks for having me on.
So a whole bunch of people probably don't know who you are because most of the time you're behind a camera and you're the guy doing the interviewing. But, you know, I often joke with you, but I actually mean it that, you know, and Jim and I, the co-host of the Leadership Podcast, often say Zach Badorf is the most interesting man in the world. So that's how I'd like to introduce you and let everybody know. So Zach was in the Navy as a journalist. Then he was in the Peace Corps, and you're in the Peace Corps in Eastern Europe. And that was in which country?
Romania.
And I almost said Ukraine. But you did spend time in Ukraine. Then you've been a journalist all over the world. You're an adjunct professor at NYU, and you're a founder of a nonprofit that gets veterans in journalism and a whole host of other different things. And how many countries have you kept the count of how many countries you've been in the world?
Yeah, back in the day, I made a list, and I don't know. Edging up on 85, something like that. It's a few.
Yeah. Now, but you haven't been to Iran, North Korea, or Venezuela, have
no.
you?
No, I've been to Venezuela. Yeah.
Oh, you have
about a month there, but
oh,
not
wow.
Iran. I think
not
I
Iran.
In trouble if they went there.
And North not
Korea,
North Korea.
Sadly not. They're on my list someday.
Well, good. Well, so you've been to all these places, and what's always amazed us is, you know, a lot of these dangerous places that you've been, you know, sometimes people in the military go, but they're with a big group of people, they're armed, there's all kinds of security. You've been in places like the Central African Republic. I think you were there almost a year, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
No security, all by yourself, really dangerous country. How have you kept your wits about you? How have you kept yourself safe in all these? You know, really, and you were in Syria right before all those journalists were captured and some of them were killed. I mean, how have you kept yourself safe?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is luck, for sure. But a lot of it is preparation. A lot of it is relationships. So, you know, I've spent time in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Syria, Iraq. Different places where there's conflict ongoing in Africa. And a lot of it is just making sure that you're setting yourself up for success. And then when you're there, you're developing relationships with the people who can keep you safe, who can help you accomplish your mission, which in this case is most of the cases while I was there was journalism.
Yeah. But you're digging in and asking questions. You know, I mean, there's no such thing as, oh, here comes Zach Badorf. I trust him. So when you say preparation and relationship building, I mean, help us understand what happens like at the beginning. So you walk into a place. I mean, where do you start to make sure? Is your head literally on a swivel?
It depends on the situation, right? But yeah, once you know, let me just give you an example.
Okay.
I've worked in Syria a few times. And under different circumstances, one as a researcher, another time, multiple times as a journalist. And so you go into these situations as prepared as you can. You have backup plans. You have people who can help you. You think through all sorts of different contingencies. And you basically know exactly how you're going to work, where you're going to go, map out a plan. Try to be prepared as possible. And then, as you said, it's about building those relationships. It's finding people who you can trust there, who you've referred to from other people who've worked there. And that person, typically somebody who's from the country, is your savior, your guide. Yeah. They keep you alive. And that's really important when you go to a place where it is tribal, where there are lots of different militias running around. Where it's really life or death, whether you know, figuring out who the right person to trust is, and building the trust with them as well. And yeah, that takes time, and it also takes money. You know, you need to make sure that you're paying your people right.
We're talking bribes a lot of times.
Certainly, there have been bribes that I've had to give over the years. But in what I'm talking about is typically when you work as a journalist overseas in a challenging environment, you'll have what they call a fixer, better known as a producer, a local producer, mm-hmm. somebody who's from the area, somebody who has more in-depth, longer relationships. And this person, you will arrange payments in advance, day rate.
Yeah. So this relationship building you do in dangerous places with people you don't know, what are some of the lessons that you've learned in developing those relationships, creating trust with people that you bring to the work world, you know, that have helped you, that you might be able to help other people?
Well, it's a lot of FaceTime, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of time where, you know, now we're digital, so we're kind of restricted, but it's a lot of things like this, where you look someone in the eye and you sit down and have some tea or coffee or a meal, many meals, in fact. Mm-hmm. You spend time in their homes. You find out what matters to them, what their ambitions are, learn more about them. And you help them as well. In many of the places where I've worked with local producers who also do their own journalism. And maybe they want to be reporting for the outlet that I'm reporting for, whether that's BBC or the New York Times or whatever. And so, you know, in a place like Rwanda, where I've reported multiple times, it could be that I work with a local reporter who wants to report for the New York Times. So it's connecting them and sharing with them, sharing resources, sharing assets, sharing connections, and building them up as well. So it's you try to think of how it can be a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah. When I was in Rwanda, I had a lot of questions for the guide, and I didn't get a lot of answers that we had. And once we crossed into Uganda, we crossed the border and he pulled me aside and he started telling me answers to all the questions I had. And he goes, I couldn't say anything in Rwanda. You know, the walls have ears. And mm-hmm. I'm like, we're out in the middle of nowhere. And he was still wouldn't say anything. Once he got into Uganda, he felt really comfortable. And it was interesting because, you know, for the most part, I felt pretty safe in Rwanda. It's kind of like in other places I've been, it felt like there was a tension just below the surface. I mean, when you were there, do you have like that sixth sense of feeling that?
That's what my story is focused on, is the dictatorial nature of the government, the culture of oppression, the lack of freedom of speech. Those are things that are, when you show up in a new environment, in this case, in a different country, you have to sort of figure out what's really going on, and what's going on under the surface isn't always evident. Mm-hmm. I guess you could, translating it into work cultures, you have to find out what's going on in the culture to be able to prosper and get to the real truth to it. So
yeah.
For me, it's work to really figure that out. And it's also, again, finding the right people, being investigative, asking a lot of questions, and a lot of it's really knowing where to go for that information, because it's not always going to be right in front of you. You're going to have to dig around and be inquisitive.
Yeah. We've got a comment here from Lynn. Cannot imagine some of the hostile environments, depending on others for your survival is imperative. So how do you get others to take a real vested interest in helping you? Great question, Lynn.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, getting paid is a...
money talks.
Money does talk. Yeah. No, I think that's for sure. It is about just, again, being invested in them as well. And so maybe I'm worth that connection to the New York Times is worth more than handing me over to some rebel group so they can sell me off and chop off my head. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a real, yeah. When you go to these places, you put your trust and your whole body and your life in someone else's hands, really.
Yeah.
And
that's different than the work world. I mean, you know, in the work world, we talk about trust all the time, but we're not talking about, you know, fearing for our life. You know, when we talk about trust, what you're talking about is like trust that I'm going to be alive tonight, tomorrow.
Yeah. And a lot of it is being able to read the situation and read the person and trying to uncover those deeper desires. Thankfully, as far as I know, I never got into trouble in that way.
Yeah.
Somebody wanted to sell me out. But I also think that speaks to a deeper humanity. I think when you're in these sort of situations, you have to be able to read people and connect with them on that human level and being able to recognize their humanity and, you know, connect with them.
Well, I'm guessing people are probably picking up on your part of your vibe, Zach. I mean, you're, you know, sort of a soft-spoken person, reserved, you know. Have you felt that you've always been somebody that was observant, you know, sort of you were on the outside looking in, you know, rather than, you know, part of the group? Do you feel like you've always paid attention more and that if somebody was sort of extroverted and it was all about them, that they would actually, you know, be in more danger?
I think there's pluses and minuses to being extroverted or introverted. And I force myself to be extroverted when I have to be.
Yeah.
But a lot of my life has been more listening and taking information in and learning from others. I think there's a lot you can learn from those around you and in my work, those around you throughout the world. There's a lot to learn. I run a little nonprofit, as you mentioned, and I founded it with a fellow Marine. I was in the Navy. He was in the Marine Corps, and you know, I'm the executive director. And so what that means is I have to put my face forward in a lot of situations where I'd rather not do it. I don't really want to share my story, but I know that I have to do it because I'm representing the organization and I have a good story to tell. And it's good for the good of the organization. So yeah, I do it and I adapt in this situation.
Yeah, somebody just wrote, Amy Schellenberg, introvert by nature, extrovert by choice. I like that. So, you know, when it comes to developing the relationships as a journalist, I'm putting you on the spot here, Zach. Do you have a go-to question? You know, something that if I ask this, you know, I'm going to go down a nice rabbit trail and really get to know this person. Is there something that, you know, that you ask that sort of opens the lid?
There's no one set question that I always ask. I mean, I always ask at the end, is there anything else you want to ask? You want to tell me? That usually leads to some interesting stuff. But I guess what I would say is that sometimes when I've interviewed people in the past, I can tell they're regurgitating the same thing that they've said a million times. And the challenge really is to get them to break out of that habit. And that's all, the onus is on me to ask good questions that go beyond, okay, then I did this, then I did that, and this is why. Okay, that's true. But tell me more about that. And you really have to, dig. And a lot of it is the why question. Why? That's the dig deeper and spend the time to go deeper.
You know, Zach, that is a great answer to my question, because I think about on the podcast how many guests we've had on. You feel like you're sitting listening to a lecture. You'll ask a question and then they're on autopilot with their story and their promotion. And And I've always thought, you know, we asked the wrong question because, you know, it just teed up this. And so, it, you know, the onus is on us. You know, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, there, one of the favorite things I've ever seen from you is you had a short video of you flying a drone. And I think it was in CAR. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole bunch of children in really colorful clothes just watching this thing in awe. Yeah. And I mean, it was, I mean, watching that just made me smile. And, you know, it made me remember that when we were in Africa, the guides kept asking us, you know, does this poverty depress you? You know, is this sad? And I remember I kept saying that, you know, yes, this is, you know, the poverty is overwhelming, but I can't say that the people I've met are less happy than the people, the average person in America. And when I saw those children, you know, that were watching your drone, they looked like the happiest kids I've ever seen on the planet. What was the story behind that video footage?
I'm pretty sure I was reporting on something super depressing. I mean, it's always what I was doing when I was over there. So when, you know, war crimes, corruption, murders, gun battles, I can't even remember. I remember where I was because it was a lovely scene in a beautiful part of the country, but I don't even remember the story I was working on. I mean, some of these places and the stories that I work on there.
But what was the story of the kids? I mean, what made you pull out the drone?
I was flying the drone around to get some shot nearby, and you know, what comes up must come down, and so there must have been, I don't know, 30 some kids just mulling about, just wanted to see this, what this guy is doing with his drone. And you know, you can play around with it, you zoom it here and there. So I was just kind of having fun with it.
And
it was a joyful moment in an otherwise depressing place.
And most, you know, that part of the world doesn't get a lot of coverage. You know, I mean, when you travel as much as you do, you can kind of see, you know, if we get a story from Europe, that's international news. You know, we hardly get anything other than, you know, Europe, Asia, and America. When you, you know, do these stories, I mean, where does that curiosity come from? You know, that even starts it. I mean, what sort of spurs, you know, you to want to dig into something?
I would say even a little bit more broader than that, I just have a desire to serve. Public service has been something that's been central to my life, pretty much, period. And, you know, whether that was in the military, whether that was in the Peace Corps, whether as a journalist, whether as a leader of a nonprofit, I believe we have an obligation to serve if we can. And so I've tried to do that. And so I think when I think about my journalism, the journalism that I've done has been focused on the public good. You know, broadly speaking, I see journalism as a public service. Not every journalist is always thinking about the public good, but nonetheless, journalism itself is something that's critical to the development of our own country and the world. And free speech is another critical element of our human rights. So for me, when I think about that inquisitiveness, why am I following down a particular path? Usually I want to tell a story that I believe is important to be told. And so maybe that's a story about corruption and what can we do to stop this corruption and maybe hold some people to account. Maybe that's a war crime again, something like that. At the same time, it could also be a good story. You know, like there were some young kids in the Central African Republic who would do a martial art and who were focused on bringing together different communities that otherwise were fighting against each other. I say fighting, I mean literally shooting and killing each other. And so these are good stories as well. You know, I think there has to be journalism that's not just negative. There needs to be journalism that looks at what is going on positively within communities as well.
Yeah, this this desire to tell a story. I mean, part of what I'm guessing you're trying to do is really to tell the truth. I mean, all sides, objective, you know, honest to goodness journalism. How hard is it to do that? Because, and to stay unbiased, especially when you're seeing.
But especially when I'm seeing tough stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's a really tough question. Because I think for me, there are things that are the truth. Some things are very definitive, and then there's perspective and your vantage point. And people bend the truth, and people do that as a weapon of war, disinformation campaigns, information operations, things like that. But it is the job of a good journalist, I think, to try to parse through that, try to come up with the best truth that they can, and to present that as objectively as possible. At the same time, I've worked on telling stories. I would clarify stories, not necessarily journalism, that have a vantage point, that have a bias. And so, for example, I've worked in for nonprofits where I've told their story, and it's biased. You know, it takes a side. I've written op-eds that take a side against the Syrian war, that is to say, against Bashar al-Assad and against American foreign policy related to Syria. So sometimes I come out very forcefully and take a side on things. And is my interpretation of things the truth? I don't know. I think that's a little bit subjective. Mm. But I do think that in our roles as journalists, as reporters of the truth, we should try the best that we can to present objective forms of information while also acknowledging our own biases. And I think that's really important, to be able to acknowledge that the words that you choose, the order in which you choose them, the people who you talk to, all these things, even if you try to report objectively, are still going to have an impact on how the story is presented, the truth that you present.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more question about journalism, then I want to talk about your nonprofit. And this is probably a hard question. You be the judge. So you've met a lot of people who are the enemy of the United States, you know, combatants, sure. Jihadists. You know, at what point have you seen pure evil, and at what point have you said, you know, hey, this person as a result of their circumstances, or there's three sides to every story? I mean, what have you learned about, you know, I mean, literally meeting people who are the enemy?
Yeah, that's tricky. I've definitely met some people who, I don't know if I would characterize them as evil exactly, but people who have done a lot of really terrible things, and who I have no sympathy for whatsoever. On the other hand, for example, I've met dozens of ISIS members, and I have zero sympathy for ISIS institutionally and what they've done and what other people have done to Syrians, Iraqis, Americans, etc. Lots of people have been the victims of this organization and still are. You know, when you hear their story, when you hear where they come from and their background, sometimes you do understand it. You get what led them down that road. And I think this translates to other parts of my life as well. When I see people who I disagree with doing things in our own country, in the United States, they have different backgrounds than me, different value systems, but I can still understand where they're coming from. I can look at people around me and see, well, that's just where they're coming from. That's the background they have. That's the information they're receiving. And this is, it's perfectly understandable why they would act or do a certain thing. And so I still think, you know, these ISIS guys, and there should be consequences for their actions. But I can definitely sympathize with their situation. There's a lot of motivators.
What have you found that we have in common, no matter what? You know, what connects us despite all the disagreements?
I think for the most part, in my time speaking with ranges of people across the world, it does usually come down to wanting to take care of themselves and their family. And sometimes wanting to improve their own community, usually, actually. And so that's usually a motivator. And so you can usually find a common thread that way of most people, where you look and you talk to people, and that usually is what is behind their action, one way or the other.
Do you think, even though you know, we've been sort of civilized for 12,000 or so years, that we're still pretty tribal?
Absolutely. Very tribal. Yeah. To our detriment. You know.
Yeah. Well, let me segue and talk about, you know, again, you're a veteran. You've helped a lot of veterans. You know, you had a big role in my life since I started my little company 10 years ago. And now you've started a new nonprofit. You co-founded it about helping military veterans get into journalism. You just secured, if I remember right, $250,000 grant for your organization. Any little background you want to share with that organization and what you've learned about helping veterans transition?
Yeah, so it's called Military Veterans in Journalism. Website's www.mvj.network. And basically, we're supporting a range of veterans who are looking to break into journalism. And it's frankly been an honor to be involved in this community and to support it. I've grown a lot personally. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'd be able to raise that amount of money with that quickly. And to grow a team and to grow an organization, to build it as it evolves, it's been very professionally and personally rewarding.
Yeah. You've become a salesperson, Zach.
I have.
two things. One, what do you think, you know, is the biggest mistake veterans are making in their transition? And what would you like civilians, business people, to really understand what veterans offer that they might, you know, misconceive, you know, what the real value of a military veteran is?
About my personal experience. I didn't network at all when I got out of the military in 2006, nor did I have any mentors. And I think both of those, regardless of the field, are critical to success. And I kind of wish I had known that. But, you know, nonetheless, I overcame. And likewise for civilians who are looking and considering veterans, I would say consider that veterans don't always come a conventional path. They're not always going to the four-year university followed by internships, followed by lower-level jobs. A lot of them come with a lot of experience already, and they're ready to jump in. It's just giving them that opportunity. Thrive and to grow.
Yeah, it makes me think that you know, most people that really are astute at hiring know that you hire for values and you can train up skills. And I guess that's what I would throw out is, you know, whether you're a veteran interviewing, you know, go find an organization that aligns with your core values, or you're an organization, you know, really, you know, you can train up skills and experience, you know, but, you know, the core values of what you're looking for, whatever those might be, I think oftentimes you'll find people have a pretty strong character and pretty solid value foundation coming out of the military. So, yeah. Zach, let me close with your question. What else should I have asked? What didn't I ask? Anything else you want to share?
I'll just close by thanking you again. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and you have some great deep questions. So you dug under the surface today. Taking
the time. You're too kind. Well, again, it's always a pleasure. I always feel with you, Zach, like there's just so many. I've described this to you before. There's just so many layers. I could never get enough time to really like even try to, you know, share in some of those experiences you've had, sort of living vicariously through some of those things. You know, I just really admire how curious you are. I think that's really, you know, what you bring. And I think when you're around other people, you always make them, you know, kind of reflect on, you know, should I be asking more questions? Should I be more curious? Because I think that's your strong suit for what it's worth. Good, Zach. Well, keep up the great work. And again, thanks for being on today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right.